In our previous studies, we've been emphasizing the development of the promise that God made to Abraham. And we noted that that promise is initiated where? Go ahead. All right. Genesis 12, Genesis 15, Genesis 22, and Genesis 26, and Genesis 28. All right, very good. And that's to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. And we know that Joseph was very much aware of the promises that had been made to the fathers. How do we know that, Randy? We know that Joseph was well aware of the promises that had been made to the fathers. And how do we know that? All right, he was to be embalmed and placed in a coffin, and he would be carried out of Egypt when they would go into the land that God had promised unto Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, and that's in Genesis chapter 50. Now, as God had made these three promises unto Abraham, very quickly, what were they? Land, nation, and seed. We see them develop in what order? Nation, land, and seed. That's right. When they were brought down into Egypt, how many came down? 70. How many came out? A lot more. All right, we have over 603,000 men of fighting age. And scholars tell us that when you factor in the women, the children, and so forth, that you have in the neighborhood of 2 to 3 million people. That's a lot of people that came up out of the land. Now, I have us on the screen listed to begin on page number 53 in our lesson book, but there was a page of review, a chart or two, that I wanted to look at with you that we did not look at as we were concluding some of the things from lesson 12, the dates to learn on the timeline. I just want us to be familiar with some of these, not necessarily all of them, and you will note that some of these on the timeline are not necessarily all that set in stone, but they give us an approximate time, about 445 B.C., the giving of the law of Moses at Mount Sinai. About 1405 B.C., the beginning of the conquest of the land of Canaan. These other dates are, of course, somewhat varied because you see the question mark of the exact time that Saul became king of Israel. But I do want you to remember that when we discuss David, we're approximately 1,000 years before Christ. Yes. No, it's in our lesson book. I just took it for the chart purpose, timeline. Yeah. That much later. It's interesting. I haven't seen that date. Yeah. I haven't seen that date. Now, again, you'll note, depending on what list or historian you're reading after, some of these obviously will vary. I didn't realize there was one that varied quite that much, but I don't know the source of this particular date yet. Okay. Uh-huh. Out of the book. Okay. Now, the reason for, I think, some of the variation may have to do with the accounting, and this is a question that we're going to probably need to talk about, and frankly, I don't have a definitive answer to it. The use of the numbers by Paul and by Moses, 400 years, 430 years, and the accounting of those years, whether they're dated from the time that the promise was made to Abraham or whether they're dated from the time that they became slaves in Egypt. Now, we know that all of the time that the family of Joseph was in Egypt was not a period of slavery. when they came down with Jacob, and he was there how long after the days of the famine? Was it 66 years, I think? Quite some time, at any rate. And so to give an accounting of all of these numbers, that's kind of what I was teasing you about a while ago. I don't know how to do that. Pardon me? I said 66, but I'm not certain of that. I'd have to go back and look. That's right. That's right. That might be the variable here for the difference between 1445 and 1200 and something. Yeah, I don't know the answer to that. I'm still working on that, as I asked you a while ago. I appreciate some input on that. And I tell you, whatever sources you're going to read on either side of the use of the 430-year figure is going to become, you'll find some interesting evidences, I think, arguments on both sides of that. But be that as it may, again, I want to hinge our argument on David reigned about 1,000 years before Christ. That gives us something to have some degree of certainty about, because of the necessity of understanding when David lived. Then Solomon, and then, of course, the death of Solomon, depending again on what numbers you start with, whether you're looking at 922 when the kingdom divided, or 932, some use that number, of the time that Rehoboam divided the kingdom. And now you've got the southern tribes of Judah and Benjamin, and the northern 10 tribes during this divided kingdom period. But we do have some pretty fair dates that we can be somewhat certain of. 721, 722 for the destruction of the city of Samaria when the Assyrian king destroyed it. And then 606 B.C. when the first group of Judeans were taken captive to Babylon. I have on the board, I want you to think of 606, 597, 586 together, and you see on the board why. 597, Babylon captures Jerusalem. The temple is destroyed. The third group taken captive in 586. The significance of these dates is the spread of 606 to 536, the precise number 70 years prophesied by Jeremiah, the period of the Babylonian captivity. And then they return by the decree of Cyrus under Zerubbabel to rebuild the temple, and we begin the reading of that in Ezra chapter 1. And here are some dates that I want you to be familiar with as well. 536, we've already talked about that. The first group returns and the foundation of the temple is laid. 520 to 516, the temple is rebuilt. And then 458, the second group returns, and in particular 444, the walls rebuilt. This during the days of Nehemiah. Yes. Pardon me? You might find them. Okay. Again, depending on the source you look at, some of these might vary just a little bit. But pardon me?
I'm not
going to
argue a year.
No. Well, on the destruction of the city of Samaria, scholars vary a year, but we can be fairly certain of the approximate time. All right. Any questions or comments just here? The purpose of that, I think, is to get a chronology in our mind of about when these things took place. And so if you can remember some of these benchmark dates, it'll be helpful as we get a little farther down the line, especially during the period of the fall of the kings and then the restoration period under the decree of Cyrus. All right, lesson number 13. beginning on what page? Page 53 in our lesson book. While you have your lesson book open to page 53, there's some interesting history on the first portion of this this lesson 13. It begins with the statement that human curiosity makes us wish we knew exactly what was happening in Egypt at this point in history. That's an interesting observation. And why don't we know exactly what's going on? Well, we don't. We just don't. We might generalize. But we don't know which Pharaoh we're talking about, what the relationship was, how many years had passed. And I ask you to give some thought to that, and I don't know that you can probably come up with anything more definitive than what we've looked at in the past. How long between Joseph and now this wicked Pharaoh who subjugates the people? I don't know the answer to that with any degree of precision. But at any rate, something to kick around. These pharaohs, we've noted that there were at least 30 dynasties with several kings in each dynasty. So how can you be really sure in terms of the exact dates? Another thing that I want us to consider is that foreigners were not welcomed in Egypt during most of their history. Now, you'll note in our lesson book that the writer discusses how some came to be foreigners in Egypt. How was that? Some came down from the Mesopotamian area and settled in the land of Egypt. Others, it is thought, came from the area of the Arabian Desert and constituted a settlement in the land of Egypt. But Egypt was not necessarily all that friendly to folks who were not Egyptians, were they? Yes. They were not at first, it would appear. And this particular Pharaoh that is ruling at the time of Joseph obviously favors the Jews because he gives Joseph permission to bring his family down. Now keep in mind that we've got a nation of Egypt and we've got about 70 people of Joseph's relatives that are coming down. So that didn't appear to be a great big threat, did it? But by the time we get to this king after Joseph, who knew not Joseph, now we've got the Hebrews growing and multiplying, and the attitude towards strangers, as it were, is adverse to say the least. Now, one of the things that we might want to observe just here, though these people, God said, would develop, and as He spoke to Jacob, would develop into a mighty nation in Egypt. This was according to the providence of God, the plan of God. But other nations, they didn't have that assurance that they would develop into a great nation of people in Egypt. Yeah. Well, keep in mind, when he first came to Egypt, he came to be a slave, sold into Potiphar's house, and then he went to prison. And then after his days of being in prison, he was brought to Pharaoh's house and made second in command of all of Egypt. So when his brothers came down, he ate at the dignitary's table, and he sent food to his brother's table. So he did not eat with them. All right. Any other questions or comments?
Thank you.
Well, I can tell you what I know about it. Two or three things.
They had animals, and so did some of them shepherd the animals still, and some of them did the forced labor because it'd be hard to hold both those full-time jobs.
Well, two or three things. One is when Joseph came to Egypt and was bought by Potiphar to serve in Potiphar's house, the text tells us that Joseph prospered. That's an interesting statement because evidently Joseph had more than just a regular wage coming in. He prospered. God was with him, and here's a man who is a servant in another man's house, but he obviously had some wealth. He prospered as a slave. Now, he had something, yes. And so we know that that's so. And I was trying to think of the passage where that is discussed. It would obviously be this side of chapter 37. I marked it. Let me look for just a moment. Verse 3 of chapter 39. It says, "And his master saw that Jehovah was with him and that Jehovah made all that he did to prosper in his hand. And Joseph found favor in his sight. And he ministered unto him, and he made him overseer over his house, and all that he had he put into his hand. And it came to pass that from time to time he made him overseer of his house, and over all that he had, that Jehovah blessed the Egyptian's house for Joseph's sake. And the blessing of Jehovah was upon all that he had in the house and in the field. And he left all that he had in Joseph's hand. And he knew not aught that was with him, save the bread which he did eat. And Joseph was comely and well favored." So whatever relationship Joseph had with Potiphar, it was not a bad one, until Potiphar's wife messed it all up. Now, keep in mind as well that here is Joseph as a slave doing well. Now, whatever that meant, I don't know. That's all the details really that I know about it. But when Joseph brought his family down into Egypt, Joseph is second in command of all of Egypt. He is definitely not a slave. And when he brings his family down, he has obtained permission from Pharaoh to bring them down. And when they come down, they're given the choicest portion of the land of Goshen. They are not slaves. They obviously do well in this portion of the land of Egypt, which after Joseph, and I don't know how long, that's a question I'd like maybe some help on, if you'd like to do some study on that, how long after Joseph do these people begin to multiply to the extent that now we have a new Pharaoh who sees them as a threat and makes them slaves?
Mm-hmm.
That land was given to them.
Right. Mm-hmm. And then when they, the night that they left, and they're supposed to ask their neighbors for all the gold and whatnot, I get the impression that they're not living over here, they're living next door to some of these people now. And I have them figured out.
Well, you may never figure that out. There are two or three elements involved in that. How much time has passed? What's transpired in terms of their relationship with the other Egyptians? Of course, now by then, we know that things are not good. They have become slaves, and a lot has changed. And what their living circumstances or environments were, we don't know. But we do know they're in the land of Goshen. Now, the reason that we know that is some of these plagues did not occur in the land of Goshen. And that was observed by the Egyptians. Well, all I know is that Abraham was told that they will come out with great substance. And that's alluded to two or three times. That when they came out, indeed they did come out with great substance. I was trying to recall, I know that we've got that in Genesis chapter 15, and we've got it again in Exodus chapter 14. There's one place in between, and I'm trying to think of where that is. In Genesis, or Exodus chapter 14, in verse 11 beginning, no, it's not verse 11. just one moment. It's chapter 12, verse 35 and 6. The children of Israel did according to the word of Moses, and they asked of the Egyptians jewels and silver, or jewels of silver and jewels of gold and raiment. And Jehovah gave the people favor in the sight of the Egyptians, so that they let them have what they asked, and they despoiled the Egyptians. Not necessarily. Chapter 3, here's the one I was looking for. Yes, chapter 3, verse 22, it says, "But every woman shall ask of her neighbor and of her that sojourneth in the house jewels of silver and jewels of gold and raiment, and ye shall put them upon your sons and upon your daughters, and ye shall despoil the Egyptians." That's the verse in between that I was failing to remember. I'm sorry. Exodus chapter 3, verse 21 and 22. We may want to go back and do a study of the word neighbor and see how it's used. It may not necessarily be somebody that's living next door to you. Do some thinking on that. It may not necessarily be somebody that lives right next door. That you would ask. I don't know. Look up the word neighbor. I know that we're to love our neighbor as ourselves, and that's a different word. Yes. Yeah, lots to be said about that expression, God was with him. That occurs about three times directly in relationship to God and Joseph. Okay? God was with him. All right. Excellent. Oh, this is one of the things I wanted to talk with you about too, at the bottom of page 53. Regarding these others who were considered to be sojourners, or foreigners, I should say, in the land, it's unlikely that the Hebrews were the only ones that had been made slaves by the Egyptians, especially in view of the attitude the Egyptians had toward those who were not Egyptians, especially by this time of the development of the people in Egypt. So we want to note that during the time of Moses, we've got a new Pharaoh on the scene that if you were not an Egyptian, you were a slave. Okay? Now, having said all of that, there's some history in our lesson book regarding the Hyksos people. I'd like for you to read that if you haven't already. The development of them, that's on page 53 of your lesson book. Now, as you look over on page 54 of your lesson book, page 54, I want to introduce this, and I want you to give some thought to it so that we can be prepared to talk about it down the pike. On the top of the page, page 54, it says, "It was part of God's providence that His people were in the land of Egypt during these years of development. He had told Abraham, 'Know of a surety that thy seed shall be a stranger in a land that is not theirs, and shall serve them, and they shall afflict them 400 years, and also that nation whom they shall serve will I judge, and afterwards shall they come out with great substance.'" That's from Genesis chapter 15, verses 13 and 14. Now we do know, of course, in Exodus chapter 12, that when they came out, they were given favor in the eyes of the Egyptians, verse 36 of chapter 12, so that they were given everything that they asked for. So they did indeed come out with great riches. Now the point I want you to study on is the use of the term, "they shall afflict them 400 years. And my question is this, were they slaves for the entirety of that 400 years? Or as Paul puts it in in Galatians chapter 3, 430 years, were they slaves for the entirety of that period? Or does that number represent more than the period of slavery? Okay? Now, I want you to think about that seriously, because we're looking back at a list of genealogies and people that we know lived during this period of time, and whether or not there was time for that many people to have developed in less time than 430 years. Okay? So I want you to give some thought and consideration to that. We may not necessarily debate that issue, but I would like to have your input on it. And it's introduced here at the top of the page. Now, in regard to our study as we continue this evening, you pointed out, Carolyn, that the Egyptians held themselves aloof from all foreigners, but Joseph was made ruler of the land next to Pharaoh himself, and the people turned to him in the time of famine. But he had to eat at a separate table, because it was an abomination for an Egyptian to eat with the Hebrews. This is your question, David. Genesis chapter 43 and in verse 32. Now, if Jacob's family had stayed in the land of Canaan, well, two things might have happened. Number one, they might not have survived the famine. And that's why Joseph said, God has brought me down here to save this people alive this day. Another thing that very likely would have happened is that they would have become absorbed by the peoples that remained in the land of Canaan. You're right. It was. Now, they had theirs that they brought down with them, whatever they brought down. But he did indeed appoint them to see after his herds. That's correct. That is correct. No, go ahead. That's a well, I don't know what point you were going to make, but well, you know, one of the things I find interesting is that when Joseph told them to say that, they were good at what they did. They had this ability, this talent. They knew what they were doing. And when the text tells us, I'm trying to find the specific verse that tells us let me just find it. I don't get the impression that they were given those cattle to a Pharaoh to look after because they were now made servants, but they were given something, they were given a job when they came down into Egypt. He has cattle too. You're good at what you do. You take care of his cattle. Pardon me? 46, is that far over? Okay. Yeah, okay, thank you. The Egyptians worshipped cattle. They had their, we're going to talk about that when we get to the period of the plagues, the disease of cattle and so forth. They believed that, I've forgotten the name of the critter, a certain bull was God. Pardon me? Well, yeah, they didn't like sheep, it would seem. And so I would suppose, much like the cattle barons of the West years ago, there was this attitude one toward the other. But one of the reasons was they had, I'm not finding the exact name, I've got two or three gods that were worshipped, a male and a female. Hathor was the cow-headed love goddess, and that's not the one I was looking for. I'll find it. I've got the chart lined up here somewhere. But yes, the Egyptians worshipped cows. They had a male and a female, a god and goddess that they worshipped. And so these fellows who would sacrifice cows, would eat cows, this was bad. In fact, I'm told that there are cemeteries that archaeologists have found where they buried their cattle in reverence. They revered those things and gave them kind of a hero's death, as it were. And so, yeah, that would present problems for the Egyptians. Now, you mentioned something that I think is noteworthy. When Pharaoh, in verse 32, it says, "And the men are shepherds," of chapter 46, Carolyn, "for they have men, been keepers of cattle, and they have brought their flocks and their herds and all that they have. And it shall come to pass, when Pharaoh shall call you, and shall say, what is your occupation? That ye shall say, thy servants have been keepers of cattle from our youth, even until now, both we and our fathers, that ye may dwell in the land of Goshen, for every shepherd is an abomination unto the Egyptians." So this was to place them in some kind of favor before Pharaoh, so they would have his blessings in this land. This land was well equipped, I understand, for grazing. And so that's one of the reasons they were placed here. Okay? Interesting. Any other thoughts? All right. We're going to move on just a little farther then with our lesson study. The covenant people of God. Question: was it by chance that the Hebrew people were in Egypt during the reign of a bad Pharaoh? Well, no, it wasn't by chance, because this is what God had said a long time before when He spoke to Abraham in Genesis chapter 15 and in verses 13 and 14, that they would serve them. "I will afflict them 400 years, and also the nation whom they serve will I judge, and they will come out with great possessions." All right. Now, when we talk about the Canaanites, what was What was the attitude that the Canaanites had about other nations? I guess the best way to answer it is just go ahead and answer it. When we think about those who inhabited the land of Canaan, they made covenants with other people. Why? They wanted what they had. It's just that simple. They wanted what they had. So the Canaanites were to, they would be somewhat agreeable with almost anybody. You remember why the men of Shechem wanted to make an alliance, as it were, with the family of Jacob? "We want you to feel free to marry our daughters. We want your daughters, and we want our flocks and herds to be able to run together, because, you see, this is good for trade. This is good business, and that's what we do." And so we noted that's why Abraham sought a wife for Isaac elsewhere and so forth, to get outside of that circle of people, which I think helps us to see the isolation sometimes that people place themselves in. Anyhow, I'm not wording that exactly like I want to. My mind's still thinking. Let me move on just a little bit to our charts here and look at these places. Identify the following places. The Mediterranean Sea. Where is it, Carolyn? Kind of like that? Kind of like that? Okay. The Dead Sea. Where would you locate it? You see it over there. The Nile River, Terry, how long was it? Yeah. Down into Africa. Yeah. A little over four. Yeah, a little over four. And that, of course, made the Nile River not only mystical to the Egyptians, but they didn't know where that water came from. Yeah. Yeah, it is. Thing, too, that makes it interesting is the Egyptians, and as far as I have been able to discover today, it's still uncertain the source of the Nile River, depending upon the season. The lakes, I believe, that you were talking about was, one was the Blue, what is the name of it? Blue something, and the other one's the White something. I believe that's right. And they have numerous tributaries into each one. Yeah. Yeah. Well, we could do a Google Earth and find that, I suppose. But there's the Nile, the Gulf of Suez, you see that, and the Gulf of Aqaba, you see that. And then the Red Sea, of course. And then, of course, here's the land of Egypt and the land of Goshen, the choicest portion of the land. And then the wilderness of Sinai. I want you to be familiar with that. And in particular, the land of Midian. You remember on a previous chart we had Midian and we labeled it over here? Randy, you commented about that. The land of Midian is also thought to be here. In fact, most favor this location because this is where Moses was as a shepherd for 40 years in the land of Midian. And it would be unlikely that he was over here. More likely that he was over here because this is the land where he led these people through. Okay? And then, of course, the land of Goshen that we've already identified. Yes. Yes. That's correct. Yes. Well, it would be unlikely that they did here. If they did this body down here, it would have put them in the Arabian Desert. But we know where they were within just a matter of days after they came out of Egypt. And it was here, not over here. Joey? That depends on the season. Yearly, the Nile would overflow its banks, and it would deposit the rich silt from its long travel down along the sides of the river, and thus it was considered the gift of the Nile, this fertile, fertile land. So it would depend on what season that you're talking about. But just to give you a general answer to your question, all I have seen is pictures of it. And excellent. I was going to suggest about like the Mississippi River from living back in that part of the country, and again, depending on the time of year, so those of you who've traveled in that part of the country with any degree of frequency know that the Mississippi River overflows and goes into farmland and deposits silt, and you've got a similar picture even today to some degree. Not, of course, like it was before the Corps of Engineers built the levees and all of those kind of things, but you still have a similar idea. Yeah. Silt? Yes. Yes. It's, well, just to kind of give you an illustration of what it is, when you've got all these tributaries coming that far, they are bringing the topsoil that is washed down into it and depositing it with the overflow here along the borders of the Nile River in Egypt. And so, yes, you've got the richest land from there up being deposited here. So when the children of Israel lived in the land of Goshen, it was a choice, fertile land. And you see why. Okay. That's right. Choicest land. All right, open your Bible there to Exodus chapter 1 once again. And let's begin reading the first paragraph. Randy, would you mind to read for me verses 1 through 7, please? 1 through 7. All right, underscore that. We've got 70 that came down into the land. Now, we've talked about variables involved in that. But 70 that are identified here that came down into the land. And then we've got the land being filled with them. In somewhat short order, as people grow and develop, note that we've got a generation here that has died, verse 6. We'll talk more about that in a bit. But the book of Exodus here opens with the Hebrews under severe bondage, or too soon to be, as they're growing and multiplying so rapidly. When you drop down in the text to verse 11, it says, "Therefore they did set over them taskmasters to afflict them with their burdens. And they built for Pharaoh store cities, Pithom and Ramesses," which tells us that these Hebrews were slaves building these very important cities. Forced labor. Secondly, while you have your Bible open there to the first chapter, I want you to look at verse 15 through 22. 15 through 22. Just for sake of time, what is it that the king of Egypt instructs the Hebrew midwives to do? Kill them. All right. The Hebrew midwives do not do that. Why? They fear God, it tells us. What then was the instruction of Pharaoh to all his people? Verse 22. All right, throw the boys in the river. Throw the boys in the river. And so we see that that was the practice, with the exception, as we begin in chapter 2, of Moses. Yes. Well, read the first part of that verse. "And the midwives said unto Pharaoh," because the Hebrew women, they're talking to Pharaoh in answer to what? Look at verse 18. "Why didn't you kill those baby boys?" And what's their explanation to Pharaoh? All right. Yeah. They just didn't do it. Their explanation to him was, they're born before we got there. Now, to what degree that was true, it would probably be unlikely that in every case of the birth of a boy, the Hebrew wife didn't make it. She wasn't on time. But that's what they told Pharaoh. Okay? Yes. Mm-hmm. It is, yeah. The more burden they put upon them, the more kids they had. We had a neighbor in Kentucky that was like that. Yeah. Well, chapter 2. I shouldn't have said that. Chapter 2 of the book of Exodus. I think he had about 7. But anyhow, chapter 2. It tells us, beginning in verse 1, "And there went a man of the house of Levi and took to wife a daughter of Levi. And the women conceived and bare a son. And when she saw him, that he was a goodly child, she hid him 3 months. And when she could no longer hide him, what did she do?" Jenny? All right, who was watching? His sister. Her name was? Miriam. You're good. Yeah, that's right. Now, note, if you will, that he was raised with considerable opportunities. In Acts chapter 7, I was studying with someone earlier this week, and I thought that this particular text of Acts chapter 7 was in the account of Exodus, and I couldn't find it. And that's because it's not there. But in Acts chapter 7, if you'll note, beginning at verse 20, it says, "At which season Moses was born and was exceeding fair, and he was nourished 3 months in his father's house. And when he was cast out, Pharaoh's daughter took him up and nourished him for her own son." The point I want you to see in this is that after 3 months, he had the privilege of being raised in the house of Pharaoh with all the riches that Egypt could offer him. So he was well blessed. Now when you come to Hebrews chapter 11, that ought to make that, hold your finger at Acts 7, ought to make this more significant in our thinking. In Acts or Hebrews chapter 11, reading beginning there at verse 23, it says, "By faith Moses, when he was born, was hid 3 months by his parents, because they saw that he was a goodly child, and they were not afraid of the king's commandment. By faith Moses, when he was grown up, refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter, choosing rather to share ill treatment with the people of God than to enjoy the pleasures of sin for a season, accounting the reproach of Christ greater riches than the treasures of Egypt, for he looked unto the recompense of reward." And it continues with a list of things that Moses did by faith. But how long was Moses in Egypt? When it tells us when he was grown up, he refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter and made this choice. How old was he? He's 40. That's right. Now you learn that not necessarily in Exodus, but you see that in Acts chapter 7, where you will read that in verse 23. "But when he was well nigh 40 years old, it came into his heart to visit his brethren, the children of Israel. And seeing one of them suffer wrong, he defended him and avenged him that was oppressed, smiting the Egyptian." So he made a choice, 40 years old, to identify himself no longer with the Egyptians. Yes. He had all of Egypt at his feet, and he chose to give it all up. Mm-hmm. Exactly. Exactly. Am I out of time? Number 2? Okay, we'll stop there. Begin with some more of this next time.